Welcome back, everyone. It is good to be back. It's good to share our heart and our research with each and every one of you. It's also good to have you back on the show, Aldred.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again.
So we need to continue on where we stopped the last time with regards to this neurophysiology. And we have talked a lot about dopamine and the effects of dopamine. And remember, Aldred, about a month or so ago, I've sent you a screenshot of the diagnosis of a 9-year-old boy. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
So what happened is I was at a school and this young boy was referred to me for counseling. And this young boy, 9 years old, he is already seeing a psychologist and he was in a psychiatric hospital for about a month. And remember, I said he's 9 years old. And then when I started with this boy, I took his file and he was diagnosed at the age of 9 with ADHD. He was diagnosed with conduct disorder. He was diagnosed with learning disabilities. He was diagnosed with a mood disorder, unspecified mood disorder. And me and you had a conversation about that boy, and one thing that really, really stood out is that that boy was playing hours and hours and hours of Call of Duty with his dad. And you explained to me what happened to that boy. You know, why was he diagnosed with all these different disorders? Obviously, they put him on so many medications that he could not stay awake during the counseling session. And we just understood now a little thing about dopamine. And we know now that dopamine was part of the reason why this young man was behaving like he was behaving. But there's also something to do with the cortisol levels and the serotonin levels. And we need to pick up on our previous explanation and our previous conversation. Just explain to us and then maybe also Call of Duty specifically.
Yeah, just to pick up from last time where we spoke, there was a study done, I think 2014, where they had like 40 people playing. The one group, the experimental group, was exposed to a very aggressive first-person shooter, and the other group did not play any games at all. And the people wanted to check the effect of a very aggressive first-person shooter if they played for 2 weeks for 2 hours per day. So they did an initial functional MRI before they played the game, and then also in the middle and then at the end. And the interesting thing that they found with a functional MRI was in the experimental group, which was the group where they played this very aggressive first-person shooter game, there was a significant decrease in the white and gray matter volume and density. So this means that the brain shrunk. That's basically what happened. You know, decrease in density in the gray and the white matter are specific areas in the brain. And the areas that were noted down was, as we explained last time, the prefrontal cortex that we knew and we spoke about, the limbic system that we spoke about, but also the parietal lobes. The parietal lobes of the brain is a part of the brain that is responsible for also logical thinking, memory, but also reading and mathematics. So if there's a decrease in density and volume in the parietal lobes and the part of the brain that's supposed to help you with analysis, with reading, with mathematics, obviously it's going to cause a significant decrease in mathematics marks. And the other area of the brain that was also affected was the thalamus. So the thalamus is the relay center of the brain. So thalamus tells the impulse that is experienced by your body to go to specific areas of the brain. So if there's a problem with the relay center of the brain and the way this relay center relays the information to the proper areas of the brain, that's going to cause an overwhelming of the relay center, and that's going to basically lead with problems like ADHD.
So is there a neurophysiological reason, what you are telling me now, why children today with excessive screen time in gaming specifically, and then also like this first-person shooter game, is diagnosed with something like ADHD or conduct disorder. We now know that conduct disorder is basically ADHD's big brother. It is all these...
ODD.
Yeah, you know, being very, very defiant, being almost like criminal behavior. So can it be that children today get diagnosed, and me and you are not medical doctors, but we are just like seeing the results here. So they are diagnosed with ADHD and conduct disorder or defiant disorder or learning disabilities, but it is because of these neurochemicals that get secreted in the brain that causes the brain damage, and now they get diagnosed with all these things, but actually it is a result of too much gaming.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a coincidence. I would say it's exactly that. You know, if you look at the exposure to games through the generations, if I can just recall the statistics, I think Generation Alpha, they are exposed to games 98%.
Yes.
To games.
Generation Alpha is the generation that...
Sub-15s.
Yes, that got basically had screens as a babysitter from young.
Exactly.
And the iPad kids, that's the other name for them.
Yeah, the iPad generation.
Yeah.
Right, and then the generation before that was the millennials, I think. It was the Generation X.
And the millennials are the ones that is now...
20s.
Yes.
And I think it was 84% there. But if you think about this logically, when we grew up, were we ever aware of any kid that had ADHD or ODD or
being on Ritalin or Concerta,
opposition defiance disorder, Ritalin, or all these things? No. But what has changed? Obviously, we haven't changed. We're still the same human beings. But what we've been exposed to has changed significantly. If you think about the increase in exposure to digital media, gaming prevalence, all those things have increased significantly over the last 10 or 15 years. And also the prevalence of ADHD, defiance disorders, etc., has also increased significantly over the last 10, 15 years. So you don't have to be a genius to figure out, okay, there has to be a correlation between exposure to digital media in the last 10, 15 years and obviously the increase in prevalence of these major disorders in the last 10 or 15 years.
But, you know, Aldred, we have just seen now during the week that it is, the state of Florida?
Yes.
That is now saying that it is illegal for a child under the age of 14 to be on social media. We also have seen now in the last month that America is now prosecuting Mark Zuckerberg, who is the creator of social media, on a federal level. Mm. But don't you think that they should starting to prosecute the creators of Minecraft and Fortnite? Wasn't it just as intentional to destroy the brain and destroy a generation as was social media intentional?
Yeah, if you think about the gaming industry is currently worth about $250 billion per year. So it's a major industry. You know, it's twice as big as Hollywood, the movie industry. And it's only five times smaller than Big Farm. And Big Farm is the industry that forced you in lockdown to stay in your houses. You know, so if they have that kind of power over you, and if you look at something like a gaming industry, they can exert a lot of power because they have a lot of money to do whatever they want.
But this is just as criminal.
Exactly, because what they also do is, you know, they employ what they call a behavioral psychologist or behavioral engineers. So what is a behavioral psychologist or behavioral engineer? They actually send these people out to gambling houses, specifically Las Vegas, and they study gambling addicts, the way they sit in front of the slot machines, the way they pull the lever, their reaction, you know,
the sound,
the lights, everything. What causes, what drives that kind of gambling addiction? And they go back and they take the data back and they build these things into the game. That's why I say, you know, a child of 10, 12 years has got no chance against a team of behavioral engineers. And that is, if you think about a game like Fortnite, Fortnite is engineered exactly like that. You know, I can go into the psychological thing of how it works, but just to give an example, the bright colors, you know, the bright colors stimulates the brain, obviously the visual cortex a lot. if you think about things like the characters, you know, it's not like real men running around. It's cartoon characters. But why cartoon characters? Because we all grew up liking cartoons, so you relate better to a cartoon character.
Or a superhero.
Or a superhero. And then also the scoring mechanism, you know, the Candy Crush scoring mechanism. It's an interesting mechanism where they have a high win, low loss. So what it actually means is, say, for example, you score in millions and you lose a round, you might lose 1 point. But if you win the next round, you're going to think, okay, if I lose 1 point out of a million, that's not a lot to lose. So maybe I can just try one more round and then I'm going to win. So then you win the next round and now your score is 1,000,001. But you think, okay, 1,000,001 is a big difference from a million. So now you're driven by a big reward as opposed to a small loss. So it's all psychological.
That big reward is like you said in the previous episode, that is where the dopamine comes in.
Exactly. What they do is, how can we get the most amount of dopamine released in the shortest amount of time? So when I was growing up, gaming was all about entertainment. It's now a question of, how can I best monetize an addiction? If I can monetize the addiction and make money out of an addiction, I'm going to make the most money. And that is exactly why the gaming industry is worth $250 billion.
So it was engineered from the beginning.
Yeah, it's
but intentional. I can understand, Aldred, the addiction to Fortnite, you know, like you said, the colors and the thrill of playing in teams and don't want to let down the teams and, you know, the skins and the constant novelty, like you said also in the previous episode. But Minecraft, really, Minecraft is a stupid game. I tried to watch Minecraft once because my cousin also played it, and I cannot understand what is the obsession, or how can children get addicted to a game called like Minecraft, which is not really like the interface and the colors and everything is very basic.
Well, that is exactly my point. How can a game like Minecraft be so addictive? So now you're going to have to think, okay, but it obviously is not the colors and obviously is not the graphics. There has to be something else to it. And then when I was growing up and I was playing games, you know, I used to spend a lot of money on graphics cards because I wanted my graphics to look as real as possible. And that was kind of the enticement for me to play the game, was, you know, to have excellent graphics, you know, it had the shadows cast on the water and everything. But now if you look at Minecraft, I also looked at Minecraft and thought to myself, but how is it possible that a character that consists out of 4 pixels can be so addictive? So it's a sandbox game. So again, a sandbox game, again, the novelty. Novelty in a sandbox game is the highest driving force behind a sandbox game, is the novelty aspect. So you can walk around with your friends, you're in a company, and you're doing certain kind of tasks, and now you're building this, and you're digging for diamonds and materials. So this is exactly the addictive mechanism that's built into it. On another level, is just using these mechanics to the best possible way. I mean, if I've got a product, it's all a question of supply and demand, right? So if there's an increase in supply, I can demand more. And if there's more demand and I supply more, I make more money. So if I'm going to monetize this the best, I have to increase the demand for it. And the only way to increase demand for this product is to create an addiction. And that is exactly what they work on, is to create this an addiction and to monetize the addiction, to make money out of it. So when I was growing up, you used to buy a game. Let's say, for example, okay, Red Alert. When I was off the top of my head, Red Alert, you would buy the game once off and you'd play it and you'd clock the game and it's done and it's finished.
Or Mario Brothers.
Or Mario Brothers, exactly. But nowadays, you don't buy the game. Most games nowadays are free to play. So you're going to ask yourself the question, but how is it possible that the game like Fortnite, that is a free to play, has got double the revenue per year than Call of Duty has? It is because of in-game purchases. So with in-game purchases, what happens is, as this whole dopamine mechanism is driving your play and driving your play, and your prefrontal cortex, you know, your inhibition control is shut off, you're going to make purchases because you lost a round with 1 point. And you think to yourself, okay, well, if I only had a little bit more armor or I had a little bit a better scope, I could have won this round. You're not going to think twice or just clicking a button and buying a better scope or buying more armor because you think that you're going to win the next round. So this is the way they work, is to drive, to monetize this. The best way is to, when your inhibition control is down while you're playing the game and dopamine is rushing your system, to introduce something else in the game that might be able to increase your capability of scoring more. So you're not going to think twice about spending money. And even, you're not even spending real money. You're spending virtual V-Bucks.
So it doesn't feel real.
Exactly. So now another psychology that they built into this is, you know, if you're going to think about, okay, if I have to take out my credit card and buy this, okay, I'm going to have to think twice about buying this. But if I spend V-Bucks, it's not really,
it's like Monopoly money.
Exactly. It's Monopoly money. It's virtual money. So I'm not going to think twice about clicking a button and spending virtual money. But how did you get the virtual money? Is you have to use real money to buy the virtual money. But because you can't, in the game, think about that whole process, you're just going to click a button and buy V-Bucks. And that is why Fortnite is one of the most, well, the highest revenue per year. And it sounds really weird, but this is the way they work and they monetize this. I mean, years back, we never had in-game purchases. We'd never had the mechanism.
Or loot boxes.
Or loot boxes. But this is what they're bringing to the game now. And every single game, if you look at it, it's got some form of loot box in there, you know, all these things. So,
do you remember during lockdown, I had a mother phoning me hysterically where her son, age, I think he was 11 at that stage, was playing Fortnite day and night. So I can understand, you know, because there was nothing else for these children to do. So they were playing a lot of games. But what that boy did, he was buying a lot of skins and weapons on his mother's credit card. And then he will go to her phone and delete the SMSs.
Notifications.
The notifications from her phone. So when she got that credit card statement at that stage, he bought like more than 5,000 rand worth of these in-game purchases. So is that also that dopamine that drives this addiction, or what is it? Is it a need to win? Is it the identity that you said to? Is it part of the identity that I am part of a team and I don't want to let down my team? What is it? Or is it the combination of all?
I think it's the combination of everything. You know, like I said previously, you are battling against neurophysiology. Dopamine is a very, very strong neurochemical. And this is why you're going to find, you know, kids, you know, leper crawling out of the room at night, stealing mommy's phone just to play some kind of game. It almost feels criminal behavior if you think about this. I mean, if you're going to steal mommy's credit card and you're going to buy skins, that's actually stealing money from someone. And that is where criminal behavior starts. It sounds really weird, but
it's like gambling.
Exactly. And you know that's wrong. But this is exactly what I'm saying is, if the prefrontal cortex or the red light of your brain is shut off, you know it's wrong to steal mommy's money. But the driving force of dopamine is so high that it drives you to criminal behavior, so you can just keep on playing the game.
And remember the other time also where the mother was like horrified about this, her grade one young boy's language, where the teacher phoned the mother and said, this boy is swearing. And this mother had like a meltdown because she said that in the family, they are not talking like that. So where did that boy hear this type of language?
Yeah.
But it's also on the game.
Yeah, you know, when your child plays online with earphones on, you can't be blasé to think like, well, he's playing to other friends of the same age. He's not. He's playing against 35, 40-year-old gamers, you know, adult men on the other side. Obviously, when something goes wrong, let me put it to you this way. If someone shoots you five times and they shoot you dead five times, you're not going to be like, oh, no, not again.
Let's
just try that. No. You're going to start swearing and you're going to start screaming and you're going to be
I did.
Breaking a few things, frustrated, everything. So this is what a small kid hears on the other side. He thinks, well, okay, I know inside me there's a very, very strong instinct to look for identity, and I need to be a male, so I need to look at a daddy figure almost. And the closest thing that a lot of them have to a daddy figure are these adult males they play the game with, and they start making friends with these adult males. So they hear this swearing and yelling and screaming on the other side, and what they think, with what they call mirror neurons, is I have to be like that. That's supposed, I think that's normal. So if I want to be an adult male and the adult male swears and yells and screams, then, well, that is supposed to be the behavior that I'm supposed to learn. And that is why they develop a whole new vocabulary overnight, because they hear by example what other adults do and they just mimic that. You know, it's a biblical thing.
But where games are very closely related to real life scenarios like Call of Duty, we have also learned, and also by studying the neurophysiology, that a child's brain cannot distinguish whether it is a real life situation or whether it is just a game. I'm thinking about our own daughter, Aldred, the other day, where she was playing a game where she was hunting ghosts. You remember?
Yeah.
And then she showed us the game and she had to go into this haunted house and hunt the ghost. And she had so many adrenaline, like, and even she's 20 years old, but even at that age, it was so real to her, and she was really, really, really scared. And she's 20 years old.
Mm.
But now the other day, remember the mother that phoned us about her boy that's playing that scary, scary, scary game. What is the name of that game? Can you remember?
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes. And you went to look at that game. You are on your way to be 50. And you said to me, this game is so scary. It's so demonic. How can a mother allow an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old on these platforms that's so scary? What is it doing to the cortisol in the brain?
No, it spikes cortisol. You know, any kind of threatening thing that you see or that you experience is going to boost your cortisol levels really high in the brain. And that, you know, you have a kind of almost an instinctive response. If there's any cortisol triggered in your body, there's a fight or flight response immediately triggered through adrenaline, you know. And this is another thing. You know, a lot of people are adrenaline junkies. And I think that is what happens with you when you experience two scary things. You are scared in that moment, but it's almost like, I want more of that scary thing. It's weird, but that is the way it works. So that is what cortisol actually does.
But is that the reason why they are now misbehaving and aggressive and rebellious, like in class?
Yeah, I think that is part of the problem. I think another side of the problem, obviously, if cortisol triggers a fight or flight response in your body, an aggressive response or adrenaline response, and then you have boys going through puberty where all the hormones are going crazy, you have a combination of testosterone and cortisol and adrenaline. It is absolutely hormonal chaos in that body. So that is why you get all this kind of aggressive acting out behavior, especially in teenager boys.
So we can talk about this for quite some time. The last thing that I just want to address, and we had this yesterday also in a counseling session, why do these gamers get sneaky and lie to parents about the amount of screen time or what they are doing, even to the point where they will steal the phone or they will wake up in the middle of the night and be on their screens without the parents knowing, or even have like a complete separate phone that the parents do not know of? Why is there that almost like I say, this...
The criminal behavior.
I don't want to say it because it sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Yes, but this criminal behavior.
Again, it's the dopamine. You can see how strong dopamine is in driving behavior. This is exactly what it is. I'll give you an example. We spoke about this yesterday about Ted Bundy. So Ted Bundy, when he was growing up, it all started with pornography. Obviously, pornography is also a very, very strong booster of dopamine, also because of the novelty concept of it. But this is what happened. You know, it started off with watching pornography, and we know where Ted Bundy's story ended. It drove criminal behavior. Why? Because dopamine is never satisfied. There always has to be an increase in more and more and more. So now what happens is, you know, another example I can give you, and we spoke, you've written this in your thesis, is about Anders Breivik, and we hear these stories about these gamers just, you know, running into a school and just gunning down all their friends, you know, because what is the next step? You know, if you've played this game 500 times over and over and over again, you can't get any kind of dopamine rush anymore.
But you are desensitized.
You are desensitized, you know, it's almost anhedonia, you know, there's no more
joy and happiness and contentment.
There's no kick. It hasn't got the same kick. That's tolerance. So now what's the next step up? You know, then what happens is they have to go, you know, to try and go into from virtuality into reality. So let's see, what can I do to get the kick? So let's see, if I can shoot people on a game, then maybe if I shoot people in real life, it'll give me a higher kick out of it. Just following the dopamine kick. And this is where things go really wrong, because now your sense, your moral sense, everything goes just completely crazy, because you have your morals go down. You obviously know, you know, it's wrong to shoot a person, but there's a lack of empathy, because there's no value of life, because you've taken life even virtually in the game so many times that your brain cannot really distinguish between virtual and real anymore. So now you think, well, if I can shoot a person 500 times, I don't really care about life anymore. It doesn't mean anything to me. So let's see if I can shoot a person and then see if that's going to give me a kick. And this is exactly what happens.
But with Anders Breivik, you know, at the end of the day, his lawyers used that exact, you know, thinking in his as part of his defense in explaining that Mr. Anders Breivik, because he shot and killed 72 people, and they said that he had brain damage because of Call of Duty specifically. One of the games that he played was Call of Duty, to the point where they said that, listen, we cannot, Mr. Breivik cannot be held accountable, or not 100% accountable, because of
he's not sane.
Well, yes, that he said that he doesn't belong in a prison. He belongs in a psychiatric ward. Because of the damage of this Call of Duty and this hours of gaming and the cortisol and the dopamine. So, so there is actually where we start seeing, all right, but excessive gaming is really, really something that needs to be studied.
Yeah, I think they call it the Tetris effect, where your virtuality becomes your reality.
Yes.
I read in this one book where the guy was also playing games a lot. And I think he was sitting in church and he was playing Diablo 3 at a point, sitting in church, and, you know, he was dozing off. And all of a sudden, there was like this big demon coming through the roof. You know, so this is like where your virtuality becomes, you can't distinguish what's real and what's not real. There's just no line between virtual and real anymore, that your virtual becomes real. I mean, easy example, your virtual friends become more important than your real friends.
Yes, or your virtual personality.
Exactly, and you create a virtual personality. How? Because of the avatar. You actually link your identity to your avatar. So, you know, I would rather be like for example, Second Life. The game Second Life, right?
But what is also that movie that I watched one day, where it was an old Steven Spielberg movie, where the game world just dominated
Ready Player One.
Ready Player One. Yeah. It's like Ready Player
exactly.
One.
Exactly. So there's a complete kind of distortion between what's real and what's not real, and your brain cannot make any sense anymore of what's happening. So, you know, you kind of lose track of what's of consciousness, as if I can put it that way.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But Audrey, thank you so much. There is so much more that we can talk about this, and we have started with this conversation on the effect on the spirit and the wound. We talked about the neuroplasticity and how this is now also like spilling over into real life, and we have talked about some examples that we've seen in the counseling room. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for sharing your vast world of knowledge, and we look forward to have you on the show again.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.